I just want to talk to you this morning about systems. It's the latest in a short series of talks that are designed to help you address the kind of planning issues ahead of September, which is often for us, particularly here in the UK, when the church year restarts, or perhaps when you're starting for the first time. Formations is going to get up and running from the back end of September, likewise with Matt down in Beckenham. Or it might be that that is the kind of the relaunch date you're going for after a sort of prolonged season of COVID. All I want to do this morning really is put some stuff in your head and onto your plate that otherwise might not be there. But I think that as a result of having to think about stuff, it's going to prepare you for what's coming. Okay. So today, what I want to think about is systems. So systems is, you might not call them that. I think as I describe them, it'll be familiar what I'm talking about. To loosely define a system, it is kind of an ongoing and interconnected process made up of more than one step or activity that achieves a certain outcome. So an ongoing, interconnected parts, a process made up of more than one step or activity that achieves a certain outcome. So it's what you put in place to get done what you want to see being done. It's a procedure, it's a routine, a way of doing things to make sure that a desired outcome is achieved. You might describe it as a collection of activities we do to get things done. So that's systems. In a moment, I'll explain some of the systems that might be operable in your church plant, in your church. But let me give you five things I think you need to know about systems, because I want you to think about what they are, why you need them, what their upsides are, what their downsides are, how to pay attention to them, and so on. So here you go, five things you need to know about systems. One, they exist unavoidably. Your church has systems, even if you haven't realized it. You might not call them that, it doesn't matter. Your church has systems. It just does, they're there. They may be big systems that are complicated or small systems that are simple. There will be systems within systems. There'll be intentional systems, and there will absolutely be accidental systems, but there are systems of that you can be certain. Your church plant has systems. For example, you'll have a system for collecting money, or maybe you don't. You'll have a system for recruiting volunteers. It's a way of doing it. You'll have a way of informing the church family about discussions that need to be had or decisions that have been made. You'll have a system for spending money. You may have a system for incorporating a newcomer into the church family or for helping someone to join a small group. You'll have a system for training your small group leaders. You will have systems that are already in place. And so it is worth asking whether you have the systems that you want. Okay. Now, I would not be at all surprised if most church planters have little appetite for thinking about systems. I think I first encountered systems thinking as phraseology as I encountered most things in terms of leadership management through conversations with Matt Beebe. And I was profoundly helped by chatting to Beebs about these kinds of things. But for most church planters, systems is not their thing. Most church planters are concerned about people, about evangelism, and about discipleship. And inevitably, they think about themselves and their own involvement in that. But what, when you become a church planter, what you need to think about is, actually, I need to make sure that my ministry is also exercised through other people. It's about multiplication, it's about training, about empowering, about delegation, and so on. Now, your experience up until this point may have been in being in churches that are smaller, and therefore they tend to have fewer, simpler systems, or at least they're less complicated systems than larger churches might have. So in other words, if you've ever chatted to Richard about the way in which things operate at Dundonald, or you've listened to some of the sort of the thinking that he's done on that, it's not pipelines, it's sort of the pathways, it's sort of the, I can't remember the way, what they call it, but the way they organize stuff, that is a complicated system. And within each one of those things, there are systems within systems. But it may well be there for you think, oh, no, ridiculous. That's of a scale and a size I don't need to worry about. We're in a church plant. It's like an unwieldy home group. I'm sure we don't need systems. The truth is you do. And I want to implore you to give attention to your systems for reasons that will become clear. But principally at this stage, the reason I want you to pay attention to systems is because you're the leader. You are responsible for what happens in your church plant. And so together with others, and that is critical, I think it is your job to think about them. Involve others for sure, but it is your job to think about systems. And therefore ask yourself the question, how do we do what we want to do? What is in place to make the things happen that we want to happen? How good are those things? How good is that system? Is it fit for purpose? Is it doing what we want it to do? Now, it's common for the following systems to be considered somewhat critical to the creation of a healthy church. There will be others, but here you go. Here are some critical things. Systems of administration, kind of organization planning, that kind of thing. Systems of administration. Systems for the provision of children's ministry, particularly if you've got a family's focus to your church plant. Systems for creating connections with your target audience. In other words, a healthy church has to have a way of connecting externally with who you're trying to reach. Systems for raising and spending financial resources. Got to give some attention to those. Systems for decision-making, leadership, and the communication of those things. Systems for recruiting, training, empowering, delegating to volunteers. Now, those are some areas in which you need to have healthy systems if you're going to have a healthy church. And giving attention to how you do those things, how you administer the church family, how you provide children's ministry. Give attention to those things, and it means that what you end up with is something that is good and healthy as a result of having a way of doing things in place. Okay, so first off then, very simply, systems exist unavoidably. Secondly, systems affect people. Systems are a collection of processes to make something happen. And that, when you think about it, seems somewhat conceptual and abstract. And it could well be that you plan them on paper and you have flow diagrams and people come in and they go out and this happens and then that happens depending on what so on. But to think of systems only as sort of conceptual and abstract and something on a piece of paper is to miss the fact that systems impact on actual real people, because people interact with a system. Think about it for a moment. If you're a visitor to a church and there is no system in place for you to be welcomed, you are impacted. In other words, the absence of a system or a really bad system affects people. But if you're a visitor and there's a clear functioning system that helps, that takes you from the outsider to the insider, then that is great. So systems actually interact with people and impact people. And the reason we have systems is because actually what we want to do is help people. So it's likely that as a church planter, people matter to you way more than systems do. And I applaud that. I don't want to undermine it in any way, shape or form. But I want to suggest that if people really do matter to you, then what you'll be willing to do is give yourself to the thought process required to interact with your systems. Thirdly, systems deliver results. I mean, they are set up to get something done. They're there to ensure that something happens. And good systems tend to work without conscious supervision. So once you've designed a good system, a good way of making things happen, it will achieve the results or the outcomes that we've set it up to achieve without us having to be focused on and micromanaging each and every step. A good system is somewhat automatic. For example, you might have a system for delivering Christmas flyers to a local community. That involve distributing through your small group. So, you know, here you go. Here are 10,000 flyers letting them know what we're going to do at Christmas. It's part of a system of interacting with our local community. So you think, okay, oh my life, 10,000 flyers. How are we going to get that done? So you sit down with others, you design it, you think it through, you work out what's wrong with it, you then explain it, and then you just let it go. And you then don't need to get involved. And it will happen automatically. somehow magically 10,000 flyers will be delivered to 10,000 homes and there'll be guests, Lord willing, at your Christmas events. Now, while good systems deliver good results with minimal supervision isn't the same as no supervision. So it's not just that you can kind of set up your system and just leave it and it's fine. I mean, the truth is, most of us drive cars. Those are pretty impressive systems. After a while, the systems don't work quite as well, which means that you have to take your car in and probably end up costing you, nothing, 600 quid or whatever it is. Now, of course, it's the second law of thermodynamics, I think, that states that everything tends towards decay and disorder. And so stuff goes wrong. It's just the way of the universe. Things decay and they drift towards chaos. And so what we will need to do is not set up a system and leave it and forget about it, but we will need to maintain our system. We can't just ignore it. And so you might want to revisit a system at certain points in the year and ask whether it is working and how it is working. And you can't just assume because of the system you set up last year sort of worked, it's going to sort of work this year. So it is worth asking the question, how can that system be improved? How can we do it better? Good systems will require some supervision, just a minor tweak here or there, some reflection on it. Oh, I wonder what, if we do that, some ongoing maintenance, if you like. It needs it. It just doesn't need to be constant. So, Fourthly, okay, here we go. Systems create behaviours. Whatever your system is currently giving you is, of course, exactly what you've created it to give you. The system is not to blame. In one sense, the system is thoughtless. The system's not to blame for giving you what it gives you. You are to blame because you designed it or someone did. It's only a system and it does what it's told to do. It's done what you've told it to do. It has no brain. It's been set up to work in a certain way, and so it does. For example, if not everyone in the church family received a letter encouraging them to give to the work of the gospel through direct debit, because it depends on a database of addresses, then it's not the system's fault if people's email addresses are not up to date. In other words, that's a badly designed system. It's a system's problem. It's not the system's fault. Either way, of course, it needs to be fixed. So it's worth paying attention. That's probably an illustration that's more related to the previous point, isn't it? But just on this thing of creating behaviors, systems create behaviors, and they can be good behaviors or bad behaviors, depending on how you've designed it. So that a system can create behaviors in the sense that it can make certain behaviors easier and other behaviors more difficult. And the way that happens is because they can create behaviors by acknowledging and rewarding the behaviors you want, which make the behaviors more attractive to people, and by building consequences behaviors you don't want. So systems reward and punish, perhaps. Systems have a way of saying, look, that's good, do that, but don't do that. Let me explain. Look, when we were allowed to be out and about and knocking on people's doors in Peckham, one of the things that we would do is gather everyone together at the end of that time of house-to-house visitation and ask the question, what spiritual conversations did you have? And Adrian did that every time. Now, the first few times, people really had nothing to say in response. It was a bit awkward. We'd sort of said hello and who we were, but no one had really moved on to spiritual conversations that focused on the gospel. After a couple of weeks, the responses began to trickle in, because we as participants began to work out, not only were we meant to get into spiritual conversations, which we knew already, but the system we put in place for door knocking, or at least for reviewing our door knocking, encouraged us away from not having an answer and encouraging us to have an answer. In other words, Adrian just invented a little system, which was, what spiritual conversations did you have? In other words, he designed the system which said, do you know what, I want the guys, let's get them back, let's ask them how they did it. And in answering that question, it's awkward if you've got nothing to say, it's encouraging if you do. And so what he'd done is actually embed behaviors in us. So we wanted the system, we wanted the reward that the system would give us, which is having something to say when Adrian asked that question. And we didn't want the awkwardness of not having anything to say. So look, systems do behave, systems encourage behavior. So it's worth asking, what's it going to reward? And where's the punishment with a small p? Fifthly, finally, systems go wrong. Doing okay for time. Okay. We've talked about this already, but you may never have spotted that systems do go wrong. And usually that's because someone else has spotted it and stepped in and taken up the slack because they've seen where it's failing. And at this point, you're thinking, fine, you know, a problem averted, there is no problem. Except that when that happens, there's always a cost. And the cost is that the good people who pick up the slack get fed up with our inattention to systems failure. And so, you know, if I'm guilty of this, I sort of think, well, you know, fine, if someone picked up the pieces, it's fine, we'll be all right. The trouble is, the one people I don't want to hack off are my best people. Because usually it's the best people who step in and keep the show on the road. They're on it, they're there, they get it, and they cover for the system when it goes wrong. And the worst people to frustrate are your best people. So your systems go wrong, but you can't just let that happen endlessly. Let me conclude, and maybe an opportunity for a few minutes of questions. You guys are obviously at the stage where you need to set up systems. It may well be that you've not got any systems in place, or they're very embryonic systems. You need to give thought to what you need in place to make happen what you need to happen. So I don't care whether you call it systems, I don't care at all whether you use that terminology, but you need to think through what processes have we got in place to make happen what we want to happen. Design them in consultation with others. It's not just you on your own and a blank piece of paper. Get others in the room to help you think those through. Use flow diagrams, use a big sheet of paper and think through who does what and when and how to make sure that this thing that we want to happen actually happens. Systems exist. You've got them unavoidably in your church family, but they exist for the benefit of people. They're to serve people. And when they're well designed, they deliver what you want, and they will create healthy patterns of behavior in people. But of course, when they go wrong, as they will do, as everything tends towards that, they will frustrate your good people. So I want to encourage you to pay attention to your systems. Over to you. Comments, queries, questions, improvements, etc.
Thanks, Perks. There's a chap called Kenny who's a project manager. For websites and stuff like that, and he's working with people globally in his job in the workplace, and he's our elder, so whenever I have a conversation with him, I'm just amazed at the way that he can just translate all this kind of mess of different things that I regurgitate, and then he can just come out with a very kind of coherent system. You know, to make it happen, you know. He's obviously gifted in that way, because he's just a very, you know, is the way his brain works is systems. Unless you have a system, it won't, you know, nothing's going to happen. So he's a real asset to have on the eldership, I think, because I'm more of a creative person than a, you know, I think out loud, but I don't necessarily do the fine detail.
And what a blessing. I mean, I think you know, I have the privilege of working every now and again with a lady who's, I can't think what her job title is, but it's sort of conflict resolution for a large multinational that works in the city, and I just love the way her brain works. I mean, she brings clarity. She knows the question to ask. Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And at every opportunity, I want to kind of spurt, shut up and listen. And she will say something helpful. Just people like that are just a great gift of God. So that is fantastic. But I think it also communicates, actually, we work better when we work in teams, or rather, the outcome is better when we work in teams ordinarily. So there's someone in our church family who I've tried to encourage to be involved in getting involved in creative solution making rather than spotting what's wrong with the thing that we've come up with, because she absolutely will spot the thing that we've come up with. And at that point, it's so potentially destructive and demoralizing. But she's absolutely right. She's got an extraordinary brain. And I want her on the inside helping us create good solutions, not critiquing the ones we've come up with because she wasn't involved. But doing it together is great. I think that's fine.
Richard, would you say it's fair to, on your point four, systems create behaviors?
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that you're actually creating a culture in the long term? So you've actually got to think quite carefully about what is the culture you want to create. As an evangelist, I love evangelism. The one thing that stands out to me is I want to create a culture of evangelism in the plant.
Yeah.
So, and then almost work backwards, because I find, like Rob said, he's creative, and most of us, I would imagine, are creative people. We don't like the nuts and bolts of things. We don't like, having to sit and think through what boxes do we need to tick. We just want to get there.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it's quite helpful to say in our minds, what is the culture we're trying to create? And then work backwards from that. What are our expectations? Because it can be a little bit unrealistic. When I joined St. Peter's, I thought I'd have half the church raging in evangelism in the first few years. And obviously that's not going to happen. Well, it could still, but what I can do is start to create a culture where evangelism is perfectly normal. To invite people to church is perfectly normal. What would you say we could do practically, just to get our heads around trying to figure out what is the culture we're trying to create? If you agree with that statement.
I absolutely agree with that statement. It was interesting when I was doing some of the reading early on, I kept thinking, hang on a second, how is this dissimilar to culture? I'm not sure that it is hugely. I think just to go back very quickly to Rob's point, use the business people in your congregation because they'll help you. That's an obvious point, but really do. They're a great gift of God. Use them. On your point, John, I agree with you. I think you want to ask, don't you, where do I want to be? If, for example, we take the evangelism, what is the system of evangelizing? And in my, we have often used the model, haven't we, of engage, evangelize, establish, equip as a pathway through which, in that section of, let's say it's engagement, you've got a system. Okay, how are we going to engage? What do I want engagement to look like for our church family? And you think, okay, let's just dream that dream. What is that thing? What do we want in a healthy engagement to look like? Right, that's the culture. That's the healthy gospel-shaped culture of engagement, right? And then, as you say, work backwards or reverse engineer it. What have I got to do to get us from where we are to where we want to be? And that in one sense is a system, isn't it? It's a macro system. You're saying, aren't you, okay, at the moment, we think that evangelism is invite your friends to Christianity Explored. But what I want is people to be able to have a one-to-one conversation with anyone about the gospel. Okay, we're here. I want to be there. Let's reverse engineer it. In order to get people there, I need to do this. In order to get people to that, I need to do this. And that is a macro system. And within that system, it would be like, okay, for argument's sake, I need to do some training. Right. Okay, how am I going to deliver that training? And it is, in one sense, it is a way of thinking, isn't it? And I think you want to ask yourself, if it's true, and I think it is, that systems create behaviors, there is going to be an upside to that and a downside. And you've just got to ask yourself, okay, what's this going to look like? So I think, and once this has helped me make sense of a decade of evangelism, which was my early days of Balham, essentially said evangelism is invitationalism. And it's the downside of attractional models of ministry, isn't it? Where you say, we're running this great event and it really will be great. The food will be great. The context is great. The talks will be great. The interaction at the tables will be great. Bring your people to this great event and they'll hear the gospel. Brilliant. Great. What's the unintended? What's the behavior that's reinforced? Invite people. What's the potential downside? So it's, in other words, when we say in our small groups, who are you bringing to Christianity Explored? What people are doing is saying, well, I want the reward, so I'll invite someone. I don't want the punishment. Therefore, I won't. Therefore, you know, I don't want the punishment is not having anyone to invite. So, in what the downside of that is, you're in danger of saying what evangelism is invitationalism. And I think it's trying to think that one through, isn't it? What are the unintended consequences I might be guilty of by having this system in place? But I don't know whether I've answered your question. I absolutely agree with the premise, and I think it is that case of needing to revisit things from time to time and actually having a question in your mind, which is where might this end up? What might we be communicating inadvertently by having this in place? Have you got further on that?
No, I think you have answered it. And I think what it forces us to do is answer the why question. And like you said, there's always those unintended consequences. So if you just inviting, you're not teaching people to engage and actually speak the gospel in their own way to whoever they come across. But I think if you start asking the why question and you can clearly articulate that as you are creating these systems, this system is in place for, you know, and you don't want to be too business speaky when you're dealing with your congregation, because they're going to go, oh no, here's another flow chart. Oh no, here's another pie diagram. And it can be there can be a danger in that you overdo the systems or you bring them to the front too much.
Yeah.
But as planters in our own minds, we want to be clear on not only what are we trying to do, but why are we trying to do it? Mm-hmm. And if we can communicate that well, I think the system hopefully can work.
Yeah. And the why question, just to sharpen that, it's why are we doing it this way? Not why are we doing it big picture? Well, because we want to reach people with the gospel. It's why are we doing it this way? Is I think